I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
So they hit North Carolina with ice raids. And they hit North Carolina with ice raids right at the same time people are raising concerns about Medicaid and health care and racist voter redistricting. And some people think then that means what we have to do is go to the ice raids and forget about the other thing. But what we know in this movement is it all connects.
Protests are continuing in North Carolina after federal agents arrest at least 370 people in immigration raids. We'll speak to Bishop William Barber. We'll also talk to Dean Fulahan, who's been picked by New York Mayor-elect Zoran Mamdani to serve as deputy mayor.
I'm grateful to him for returning to public service, and I know he has chosen to do so because he believes in our administration's ability to deliver universal child care, making the slowest buses in America fast and free, and freezing the rent for more than 2 million rent-stabilized tenants in this city.
We'll look at how Mamdani plans to fund and pull off his affordability agenda as mayor of New York. And we'll talk to Sarah Lee Whitson, co-author of the new book From Apartheid to Democracy, A Blueprint for Peace in Israel-Palestine. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United Nations says Israel's war on Gaza has created a human-made abyss that will cost more than $70 billion in reconstruction over several decades. According to the UN report, from 2023 to 2024, Gaza's economy contracted by 87%, leaving a gross domestic product per capita at $161, among the lowest in the world. This comes as Israel repeatedly violates the U.S.-brokered ceasefire. At least 342 Palestinians have been killed since the start of the truce on October 10th. Meanwhile, a new study from the Max Planck Institute for Demographic Research in Germany says the death toll in Gaza likely exceeds 100,000 people. That's higher than the Palestinian Health Ministry's count of 69,733 people killed by Israel. According to the study, life expectancy in Gaza fell by 44% in 2023 and 47% in 2024, compared with what it would have been without the war, equivalent to losses of 34.4 and 36.4 years, respectively, unquote. Meanwhile, Israel says it's received another set of human remains from Hamas and Gaza, but it's still not clear if they belong to one of the three remaining hostages. This comes as aid agencies are warning the rainy winter months in Gaza are worsening the humanitarian situation as officials are scrambling to mitigate the flooding. Nearly all of Gaza's 2 million residents are displaced and forced into tents or shelters with no proper sewage facilities. Palestinians are forced to dig cesspots for toilets near their tents that are now overflowing with heavy rainfall.
Inside the tent, children are tripping and falling. There are illnesses everywhere. Look, we're getting sick. Look at the pot. I'm collecting the water so my children won't get sick. Do you see? I am taking the water out of my tent so my children won't get sick. All of this causes disease and spreads bacteria. Look at the hole in the ground. See how they fall and sink into the water?
In the occupied West Bank, human rights groups are calling on Israel to release Palestinian journalist and activist Ayman Ghareb after he was arrested on November 17th and held incommunicado for days. Israel now plans to hold him under administrative detention without charge or trial. He was reportedly hospitalized after he was transferred from Israeli military custody to the prison system, raising fears he was subjected to torture like many other Palestinian prisoners. Brazil's former far-right president, Jair Bolsonaro, has started serving his 27-year and 3-month prison sentence for plotting a coup against Brazil's current president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. During his hearing on Sunday, Bolsonaro blamed medicine-induced paranoia that led him to tamper with his ankle monitor while he was under house arrest. Back in September, the Brazilian Supreme Court convicted Bolsonaro and his allies of trying to overturn the results of the 2022 election and assassinate President Lula before he took office. A week after Lula was sworn in, thousands of Bolsonaro supporters stormed government buildings in the capital, Brasilia. About 1,500 people were arrested. President Trump said he's sending his envoy, Steve Witkoff, to Moscow next week to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin. This comes as Bloomberg published the transcript of an October 14th phone call in which Witkoff appeared to advise Yuri Ushakov, Putin's foreign policy advisor, on how to appeal to President Trump, saying, quote, congratulate the president on this achievement and that you respect that he's a man of peace, unquote. Witkoff also suggested Putin call Trump ahead of the White House visit by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, a conversation that allowed Putin to persuade Trump against giving Kyiv Tomahawk cruise missiles. Trump followed Putin's advice and revoked the author of the missiles to Ukraine when he met with Zelensky in the White House. The leaked call comes just days after the U.S. presented a 28-point peace plan to end the war in Ukraine, largely reflecting Russian positions. Louisiana's Surgeon General, Dr. Ralph Abraham, a skeptic of COVID-19 vaccines who halted the state's mass inoculation campaign, has been tapped to serve as second in command at the Centers for Disease and Control and Prevention. Dr. Abraham has been a vocal supporter of Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and has said he would support investigating the debunked link between vaccines and autism. Soon after he was named Louisiana's Surgeon General last year, Dr. Abraham banned all vaccine promotion and events by the state's health department. Later that year, Louisiana recorded the worst outbreak of whooping cough in Louisiana in 35 years. In the Louisiana state legislature, Dr. Abraham backed a bill banning fluoride in public water systems and another bill pushing ivermectin to treat COVID, which has been widely discredited. Dr. Nirav Shah, who served in the CDC under the Biden administration, said Dr. Abraham, quote, gives Secretary Kennedy some scientific and medical cover for their odious and unscientific beliefs, unquote. The FBI is investigating the 6 congressional Democrats who filmed a video message urging members of the military to refuse to carry out unlawful orders by the Trump administration. In a joint statement, Democratic Congress members Jason Crow of Colorado, Maggie Goodlander of New Hampshire, as well as Chris DeLizio and Chrissy Houlihan of Pennsylvania wrote, quote, President Trump's using the FBI as a tool to intimidate and harass members of Congress. Yesterday, the FBI contacted the House and Senate sergeants at arms, requesting interviews. No amount of intimidation or harassment will ever stop us from doing our jobs and honoring our Constitution, they said. Separately, the Pentagon announced it'll investigate Democratic Senator Mark Kelly of Arizona, who is also featured in the video for, quote, serious allegations of misconduct, unquote. Senator Kelly, a former Navy pilot, could be recalled to active duty for a possible court-martial. Senator Kelly is a former astronaut who spent 50 days in space and is married to Gabby Giffords, who was shot in the head in a mass shooting in Tucson in 2011. An Iranian academic at the University of Oklahoma has been released from an ICE jail 3 days after he was taken into custody by federal authorities at an airport in Oklahoma City. Vahid Abedini was flying back after attending a Middle East Studies Association conference in Washington, D.C. He's an assistant professor in Iranian studies and has an H-1B visa to work in the United States. It's unclear why he was detained. The Trump administration has been known to target international students and scholars as part of its immigration crackdown. Thousands of immigrants could be eligible to bond hearings after a federal judge in California ruled U.S. authorities cannot indefinitely detain them. U.S. District Judge Sunshine Sykes said Trump's denial of bond hearings is illegal. Her ruling will have a nationwide impact for immigrants who are subjected to the mandatory detention policy while they fight their cases in court. In related news, the Justice Department has admitted it was Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem who made the decision to deport a group of Venezuelan men to the notorious Secat mega prison complex in El Salvador, ignoring a judge's order to keep them in custody in the United States. The disclosure came in response to demands by U.S. District Judge James Boasberg that the Trump administration name the officials involved in the controversial removal operation as he's resumed a criminal contempt inquiry into whether Trump officials violated his March order to halt the deportation flights of Venezuelan immigrants to El Salvador. Among those who reportedly advised Noem to ignore Boasberg's orders were Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche, President Trump's former private attorney, and then Principal Associate Deputy Attorney General Emil Bovee. During her visit to SECOT in March, Noem posed in front of an overcrowded cell of detained men. They were shirtless, lined up behind her. Several of the Venezuelans sent to SECOT by the Trump administration, who've since been released, describe being tortured as well as sexually and physically abused by guards. David Huerta, head of Service Employees International Union California, the state's largest union, has pleaded not guilty to a misdemeanor after he was arrested and accused of obstructing an ICE raid in Los Angeles in June. Prosecutors had initially charged him with a felony, which would have carried a maximum sentence of 6 years in prison if convicted. David Huerta spoke outside court on Tuesday.
These charges are baseless. They're an attempt to silence anyone who dares to speak out, organize, or demand justice. I will not be silenced. I look forward to presenting my case and being exonerated. I will continue to stand with you until every worker and every family is safe from raids, separation, and fear, and our constitutional rights are protected.
In Thailand, catastrophic flooding in the south of the country has killed 33 people and displaced more than 2 million people in the past week. The Thai military sent troops, helicopters, and boats to rescue stranded people, some of whom are trapped on roofs and clinging to electrical wires to stay above the flooding. Experts say this year's monsoon season has been heavier than usual in Southeast Asia due to climate change. To see all our coverage of the UN Climate Summit in the Amazon in Belém, Brazil, you can go to democracynow.org. In Nigeria, President Bola Tinubu said that all 24 schoolgirls kidnapped last week in northwest Nigeria have been rescued. More than 300 students and staff from a Catholic boarding school were abducted last Friday. 50 of the kidnapped students managed to escape over the weekend. This is 13-year-old Stephen Samuel, who escaped the gunmen.
I run. He did not see me. I start going. I don't know where I should follow. I don't know the place that I can follow. But I just describe the way, the road that we follow before. I'm going. We meet with one of our neighbor here. And he saw me. May I know him? He know me. And he now carry me to their house. And I gave me clothes to wear, and I bring me to my house.
President Trump yesterday turned the annual Thanksgiving holiday turkey pardon into a campaign-style rant against his political enemies and fat-shamed Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker. President Trump also again vowed to send federal troops to Chicago.
The mayor is incompetent, and the governor is a big fat slob. He ought to invite us in, say, please make Chicago safe. We're going to lose a great city if we don't do it quickly.
And President Trump is reportedly considering a proposal to extend health insurance subsidies under the Affordable Care Act. Divisions over extending the health care subsidies were at the heart of the 43-day federal government shutdown, the longest in U.S. history, with Democrats insisting on continuing the subsidies. Millions of people in the U.S. face spiking health care costs when the tax credits expire at the end of this year. On Monday, Bishop William Barber gave a eulogy in Raleigh, North Carolina, decrying Trump's cuts to health care, public health funding, and other essential government programs.
Before they ever passed this bill, 87 million people didn't have health care or were uninsured. Before they ever passed this bill, there were 140 million people who were poor and low wealth. Before they ever passed this bill, 800 people were dying a day from poverty. We were already in crisis before they passed the bill, and this bill adds to the crisis and destroys more lives.
Bishop William Barber will join us later in the broadcast to talk about health care and ICE raids in North Carolina after federal agents arrested 370 people in immigration raids. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We turn now to the Middle East as Israel continues to carry out attacks in Gaza. Since the U.S. brokered ceasefire went into effect, Israel's killed more than 342 civilians there, including 67 children. In related news, Axios is reporting President Trump and Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman had a heated discussion last week about Israel when the two met at the White House. Trump was pushing for Saudi Arabia to join the Abraham Accords and normalize relations with Israel, but the Saudi Crown Prince refused. To talk about all of this and more, we're joined by Sarah Lee Whitson, the executive director of DAWN, an organization working to reform U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East. She's co-author of the new book, From Apartheid to Democracy, A Blueprint for Peace in Israel-Palestine. Before we talk about Gaza, Sarah Lee, I'm wondering if you can talk about this meeting at the White House between President Trump and Mohammed bin Salman. In a moment, we are going to turn to Prince Mohammed bin Salman in the White House, sitting next to President Trump. He was questioned by ABC News White House correspondent Mary Bruce about his involvement in the 2018 murder of Washington Post opinion columnist Jamal Khashoggi. After condemning ABC as fake news, Trump answered by defending the Crown Prince. This is what he said.
As far as this gentleman is concerned, he's done a phenomenal job. You're mentioning somebody that was extremely controversial. A lot of people didn't like that gentleman that you're talking about. Whether you like him or didn't like him, things happen. But he knew nothing about it. And we can leave it at that. You don't have to embarrass our guest by asking a question like that.
Trump's comments contradict a U.S. intelligence report, which found Prince Mohammed bin Salman ordered Khashoggi's killing. In 2018, Khashoggi was lured into the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, where a 15-person team led by a close associate of MBS drugged, murdered, and dismembered Khashoggi with a bone saw. You've been closely following and involved with this case, Sarah Lee Whitson. If you can comment on this meeting.
Well, the meeting managed to bring back into the spotlight the grim reality, which is the man sitting in the White House next to President Trump is a murderer who our own intelligence officials verified had ordered the gruesome torture dismemberment of Jamal Khashoggi because he had been a vocal critic of Saudi Arabia and Mohammed bin Salman. Really, the words that President Trump used to dismiss dismiss this killing as somehow something acceptable because Jamal may have been controversial or disliked. The notion that, in fact, refuting the findings of our own intelligence agencies and, frankly, everybody else who had been following the matter, that Mohammed bin Salman ordered this killing was a grave disrespect to our own intelligence agencies, but also a shocking assault on our own media, effectively telling us, telling the media, telling the journalists to shut up and not ask embarrassing questions. Obviously, that's the job of the media. The job of the media is to put on the spotlight the issues that politicians would rather we look away from. But Mohammed bin Salman and President Trump reminded us all that, in their view, it's okay if we ignore the facts, if it's okay if we look the other way. And if Mohammed bin Salman is going to come with gifts of $600 billion for the U.S. economy, we should all just shut up and take it.
And Sarah Leewitson, this visit of MBS to the United States comes obviously as the Trump, as Trump's family is conducting all of this business with Saudi Arabia. Could you talk about this, for instance, the black tie dinner for MBS at the White House that was attended by all of these CEOs, Elon Musk, Amazon's Jeff Bezos, and Apple's Tim Cook? Well, talk about the Trump business interests in that country.
Sure. Trump's family have had business interests in Saudi Arabia that they have dramatically expanded since the first Trump administration. As folks will recall, just a few weeks or months after leaving office, Mohammed bin Salman invested $2 billion in Jared Kushner's startup investment fund and was the sole investor through the public investment fund in this fund. He gave Steven Mnuchin, the former U.S. Secretary of Treasury, $1 billion just after he left office. And now, with the return of the Trump administration, you know, it's been a hogfest of investments by the Trump family, including plans to build new Trump resorts in Saudi Arabia, including individuals, Trump's sons, Trump's company, which he has supposedly disinvested himself from, making massive investments in Saudi Arabia. But the rot goes very deep and very wide, because this is not just a problem of Republicans in the Trump administration. This Saudi influence, Saudi purchase of former U.S. officials, over 200 former U.S. military officials now on the payroll of Saudi Arabia, goes back years, and it's a rot that is deep and expanding. What is dramatically different is the massive investment of Saudi Arabia, the public investment fund controlled by Mohammed bin Salman, in nearly all aspects of the American economy, because the strategy of Saudi Arabia is a strategic deployment of capital to buy influence and control, to win over U.S. policy by buying the policymakers, to win over U.S. businesses by buying over U.S. businesses, and paid for by the American people, because what Mohammed bin Salman wants is a security guarantee from the United States. He came close to getting that. President Trump still hasn't delivered that because of this dispute over normalization with Israel. But effectively, this is the U.S. government promising to deploy American men and women soldiers to defend the Saudi crown prince, to defend the royal family, in exchange for profits for U.S. companies, U.S. businesses, and U.S. officials.
And you mentioned normalization with Israel. Axios is reporting that in the Tuesday meeting between Trump and MBS, this became kind of a fraught discussion on the, when it turned to the Abraham Accords and establishing relations with Israel. Could you talk about that as well?
Saudi Arabia and Mohammed bin Salman have been very clear that they will not sign a normalization agreement with Israel until there's an actual, detailed, credible pathway for Palestinian statehood. I think President Trump thought that the vague, illusory language of the peace plan, the so-called peace plan that he's put forward that is now the basis of the UN Security Council resolution, would be enough to paper over the actual absence of any kind of a plan for Palestinian statehood. But the Saudis didn't buy it. And the Saudi leadership has made clear that even Mohammed bin Salman, the absolute dictator of Saudi Arabia, cannot withstand a challenge like this to his own population, which strongly supports the Palestinian people. Saudi Arabia was reminded, has been reminded in the wake of the genocide of Gaza, the ongoing genocide, that the Saudi people abhor the violence against Palestinians, and that not even his dictatorship can withstand normalization with Israel. It would be a threat to him and his ability to continue as dictator in Saudi Arabia should he make peace or normalize with Israel under these circumstances. This is really the Israeli government, the extremist Israeli government, sabotaging itself, refusing to even give Mohammed bin Salman throwaway words, throwaway promises of a two-state solution, because they are so strongly opposed to it that they will not make even those throwaway words and secure normalization with Saudi Arabia. I think their calculation was that they can give them a few crumbs in this peace plan and get there, but clearly the Saudis rejected that, and that wasn't enough. And so as a result, no defense agreement was concluded. But I expect that this issue is going to continue to arise, because the Saudis are going to continue to develop stronger ties with China, stronger military ties with China, and potentially Russia, and, of course, other European states, unless there is a commitment from the United States for a defense agreement, which is their number one priority.
Sarah Lee Whitson, I wanted to talk to you about your book, The Latest News in Gaza. The UN says Israel's war on Gaza has created a human-made abyss that'll cost more than $70 billion in reconstruction over several decades. According to the UN report, from 2023 to 24, Gaza's economy contracted 87%, leaving gross domestic product per capita at $161, among the lowest in the world. This comes as Israel repeatedly violates the U.S. brokered ceasefire. At least 342 Palestinians have been killed since the truce on October 10th. And there's a new study from the Max Planck Institute for Demographic Research in Germany. It says the death toll in Gaza likely exceeds 100,000 people, way higher than the Palestinian Health Ministry has said. If you can talk about this in the context of the new book you just wrote with Michael Schaefer Omerman, called From Apartheid to Democracy, A Blueprint for Peace in Israel-Palestine.
Well, the new UN Security Council resolution is exactly the problem that we're trying to solve, which is this failed approach to actually come up with a plan to address the real problem for Israel-Palestine, and that is Israel's illegal occupation and apartheid rule. These piecemeal efforts that treat Gaza as a separate, distinct problem, that treat the problem as Palestinians and how to rule over them, is never going to succeed. And we all know that the two-state solution process proposed by the Oslo agreements have failed. And in this void, we have the ability of Israel to maintain its permanent occupation, its permanent state of war. So what my book with Michael Omerman attempts to do is to come up with a new plan, a new blueprint for how to bring peace and security to Israel-Palestine. It includes the establishment of a transitional government, and obviously we're far way off from Israelis agreeing to that. But a transitional government with the priority of ending Israeli occupation and apartheid and creating a ground of democratic rule between the river and the sea in Israel-Palestine that will allow the people who live there to democratically decide, as they should in anywhere on the planet, what they want their future governance to look like. But it prioritizes ending Israeli crimes of occupation and apartheid ahead of the secondary questions of governance, and it demands that those questions of governance, whether there should be one state or two states, binational, confederation, should only be resolved by the people who actually live in the territory of Israel-Palestine.
So, Sarah Lee Whitson, talk about more about the framing of what's happening both in Gaza and right now, the escalating violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, as your framing of apartheid.
Well, the fact of apartheid in Israel-Palestine is really the starting point of our book. We recognize that there is a one-state reality. Numerous writers have described the one-state reality, which is an apartheid reality, which is Israel as the sovereign, ruling in a fashion that constitutes apartheid. Now, this is the conclusion that has been reached by nearly every human rights organization that works on the matter, legal experts that work on the matter. And that is the problem.